Blog Talk Radio.
Off the chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason, and this will be the only show that we're doing this week because it's the beginning of the silly season. And those of you that know me know how much I do indeed hate the silly season, but apparently other people enjoy it. So in honor of those who do enjoy it, we will not have any more shows this week because there are people getting ready for Thanksgiving and family and friends and don't want to impose on that, but we will be back next Wednesday night with author, martial arts artist Tom Futrell, also known as Reaper. But tonight we have a wonderful, wonderful guest. I've known this man for God seems like forever now. He is a horror author. His name is Rick Powell, and he lives up in a very cold place called Oak Forest, Illinois, with his son Brad. Rick is an absolute lover of horror and dark fiction, and his poetry and stories have appeared in Radical Dislocations, Walloon's Library, Satan's Holiday, Welcome to Your Nightmare, Blessings from the Darkness, The Nightmare Engine, Dark Eclipse Magazine, Shadows and Light Magazine, Twisted Dreams Magazine. He's going to have to pronounce the next one because I can't pronounce it. Temporary Skeletons, Don't Look Back, 13 Terrifying Tales of Urban Folklore, Ladies and Gentlemen of Horror, 2014, My Friend, Hydra Stars, Infernal Ink Magazine, Toys in the Attic, Cherry Nose Armageddon, and so many others. This man's short stories and dark poetry are things that nightmares are made of. If you love artists like Edgar Allan Poe and Thomas Ligeti and Arthur McCain and Ramsey Campbell, yeah, you will like Rick. Hello, my friend. How are you this evening?
Hello, Yvonne. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I am so grateful and so appreciative that you are spending an hour with me tonight. What a way to start off the silly season with horror. I love it.
Yeah.
Makes me happy.
Yeah. Hey, nothing more horrifying than going into this season, I'll tell you that.
I'm telling you. That's why I try to do all my Christmas shopping online, because I hate dealing with all those people and all those crowds. So you will have to pronounce the one place where your stories have appeared that I can't pronounce. It starts with a C.
Cthulhu Haiku. That's it's a book of haiku and poetry, and I had one of my poems in there. It's Cthulhu is basically a creation of H.P. Lovecraft, and the man that got that together, that Cthulhu Haiku, it was Lester Smith, and every once in a while he puts out books asking for poetry submissions or haiku, and that was one of my works was in there.
Well, I'll have to check him out, because if it's Lovecraft-based, we all know how we all love Lovecraft.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
So, and that segues into, you've listened to enough of my shows that before we start talking about your wonderful product, let's talk about the man himself. How in the world did you get to where you are today and practicing your craft and honing your craft and sending chills down the backbones of your readers? What prompted you to take this path as opposed to something else?
Well, I've been, you know, a lover of horror and dark fiction my whole life, since I was a small child. I grew up in the south side of Chicago here with watching Creature Features, Twilight Zone, Outer Limits. I mean, I was always that weird kid that always loved horror movies and comic books, and I basically never grew out of it since I was a child. And about 4 or 5 years ago, I was going through a tough personal time myself, and I was in a very dark place, and I started writing poetry to help me get through it. And then some incidences happened, you know, a year after that, where I lost two people that meant the world to me. You know, I lost my wife, and after that, I lost my brother, and I just started going more into my writing and poetry, and that's basically saved my life, was my writing and you know, my son, and you know, just getting through life. So basically, just the writing, I just totally just delved into it, and it really took off, and you know, it's been going pretty well, and I enjoy it. People read it and they enjoy it, and it just started going from there.
When you started down this writing path, was it something that you had thought about doing as a child or in school, or was it just something that morphed because you had to expel those feelings of darkness before it overtook you?
Basically, it was very therapeutic. It was cathartic. I just was reading a lot of Poe, and I was digging into a lot of books, and I just, December 20th of 2012, I remember the day I was at the woods, and I started writing my first poem, and it was after I was reading Edgar Allan Poe's Annabelle Lee, and I just started, you know, writing a few sentences, and then after that, I finished one poem, then after that, I wrote another and another, and within about a year, I had about 50 poems, and I looked at it, and I think, I wrote all these? Where did these come from? And I, you know, contacted, I sent in a poem to a book, and it was called Radical Dislocations, and in the meantime, I contacted Hydra Star about sending up a short story, and everything just started going through there, and I, you know, she helped me publish my first book of poetry, and Dave Lipscomb did the cover for that, My Soul Stain, My Seed Sour, and it just took off from there, and I just got the itch, and it started getting into my blood, and I just kept running with it.
Well, what I find interesting, because you've known me long enough to know that I am a lover of Poe, and for Annabelle Lee, which was not the darker of his poems, inspired you, is interesting to me, because as you may or may not know, when he wrote The Raven, his wife was dying, and he was wondering how he was going to grieve, because none of us know. It's a personal thing with every different death, and none of us know how we're going to grieve or how long we're going to grieve or what's going to happen when we grieve. So he's writing this, and then after she died, he wrote Annabelle Lee, which was, for him, cathartic. So for you to be reading such a beautiful, sweet, loving poem to help you grieve, which is what you were doing, and to help you start healing, says a lot for that particular piece, because it's not dark. It's not top. It's a poem of love.
Yeah. Yeah, I never noticed that before, because right now I talk to a few people that read some of my stories and poems, and they point things out to me, and I'm thinking, really? I never noticed that. You know, I mean, I just started writing to get through some personal demons, you might say, and I just kept writing because I started to really enjoy it, and I started delving myself into my work, and that helped a lot, you know, and basically, I, you know, it developed into some personal philosophies, and I've, you know, been a little bit stronger because of it. So writing really helped, and it's kind of weird because, you know, the horror genre is not what people would think. Oh, how could that help you move on? I mean, that stuff's so dark, that stuff's so, you know, horrifying and stuff, and so depressing. Well, basically, it's just kind of expurging some things into a page, and taking that ink and using his life's blood. And now that it's all over with, I'm thinking, okay, this, I took something negative and made it positive. And that's,
well,
yeah,
what people don't, realize is within all of us, there is darkness, because darkness and light, one cannot really exist without the other. And we all have that darkness in us. And it's like, which wolf do you feed? We always have the evil wolf and the good wolf. And what you did, rather than internalize all of that darkness that was in you, you let it out. And it became a positive thing to the pain you were feeling. And sometimes the world is dark. That's just the nature of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't think of it at the time, but then I started thinking about what Robert Bloch once said, the man who wrote Psycho, and he's a famous horror writer. One of the things he always said was, the darkest place in the whole world is inside the human skull. And I was thinking, yeah, he's kind of right there, because, you know, sometimes
well,
I write some stuff. Yeah, and one time, sometimes I write some stuff, and I read through it, I was thinking, wait a minute, where did this come from, you know? And, you know, maybe I'm more demented than I know, you know.
We were discussing some of the authors that you read and that you studied, and one of them is Thomas Ligeti, and we were discussing the fact that he suffers from chronic anxiety.
Yes, and if you read his stuff, you could tell.
But it's probably like a therapy session for him to write it, because it is so obsessive within him, his psychic, that he would probably go completely mad without it.
Yeah, it's very nihilistic when he writes. You know, he could always see that there's no shining rainbow at the end of the story, you know, but that's just how he flows. And he's very unique in the writing world. So, and very, you know, unknown, but, you know, except for the people that, you know about Lovecraft and such, you could see that, so.
Well, Mozart was the same way. Some of the pieces he wrote were extremely dark, and he suffered from depression.
Yeah.
Did we see a pattern here, Rick?
I guess we do see a pattern. Yes, we do.
We're all slightly crazy.
Yeah, well, hey, I mean, normal people scare me. Trust me.
Well, they scare me, too. I really worry about the normal people. So your first book, you donate all of that proceeds to the American Heart Association.
Yeah, my first book of poetry, My Soul Stained, My Seed Sour, that was basically where I just took all my poems. I didn't really categorize them. I just threw them into a book, basically, put it out there, you know, just, you know, took a chance. And I decided, I got an inspiration from Jennifer Miller. She does the Ladies and Gentlemen of Horror series. Every year she gets authors together and she donates her proceeds of her book to the American Cancer Society. Well, a couple years ago, I was in her anthology, and that gave me the idea that, okay, I'm going to take my book of poetry, and I'm donating all the proceeds of that to the American Heart Association because, you know, my late wife, she passed away through, you know, heart condition. So that's why I'm taking all the proceeds from that first book, and just everything I make from that, I just donate.
Is that like a healing process for you as well, to feel like that, and you are, you're making a difference because we know that every penny counts, but to feel like that you're contributing to something that might save someone else's loved one from the same fate that your wife suffered?
Yeah. I just feel it's something I have to do. I mean, it's hard to put a reason to it. But it just, like I said, you know, I try to take my work, and especially my poetry, something negative, and turn it into something positive. And, you know, I'm trying and going through life with that positive outlook. So that's why I take this, all these dark poems, all this dark writing, and turning it around and doing something good with it. So it's just something I have to do.
And that brings me to a question, and that is, how many people do we both know, of course we both know a bunch, who have allowed the darkness in their life take over their life, as opposed to putting a candle in the middle of that darkness and putting light back into their world, and what it does to them?
Yeah, I know a lot of people there. I have some people close to me going through some tough times now, and I'm trying to help them out as much as possible. And yeah, it's there's a lot going on with loved ones and other friends that you know, you really don't know what they go through unless you've been there yourself. And 4 or 5 years ago, I was in their place. Big time. So one of the reasons I'm still here is because of the writing. And if I didn't start writing, I don't know where I'd be right now. So, yeah.
Well, and this time of year is, I call it the silly season, but it's really a sad season, because this time of year is when there are more domestic abuse.
Mm-hmm.
There's more suicides. There's more domestic murders. There's more of everything that has to do with the negativity of the human soul than any other time of the year. And
right.
I don't know if it has to do with the over-commercialization, if it has to do with some families don't get along, so ergo they don't get together. Some people just have nobody because maybe everybody around them has died, they're elderly. Or if there's a trigger from a childhood that causes people to stay stuck in that darkness. If you were to give someone some advice about how to break that way of life, because they're stuck. It's like grief. You know, you can get stuck in grief and not move forward. If you were to give, because you've been there, if you were to give someone some helpful hints, we won't say advice, but let's say helpful suggestions of how to get past that darkness and move forward, because we all know that's what our loved ones want us to do. They don't want us to stay stuck in that past because it's not healthy, for one thing. If you were able to give someone some helpful suggestions, what would you tell them?
Well, a couple of things. One, I would say don't let pride run your life. Ask for help if you need it. You know, ask someone. You know, don't go into that area alone. You know, and you know, everybody's going to need some help sometime. So you got to be there to, you know, ask and, you know, just say, hey, I need some help here, even if it's just to talk to someone or if it's just someone that's a sounding board. And another thing is if you can't, if you have to use some means to get it out there, either by writing, painting, music, you know, don't be afraid to try something that'll help get you through the next day. So that's, you know, just write something, a poem, let you know how you feel. You know, that's helped. That's very cathartic. And or draw a picture, you know, paint something. That helps, and, you know, you may think it sucks, but other people don't. So, and that'll help bleed everything out, you might say. Use the arts and think, you know, you're number one. You know, no one else is like you. You know, there, you got to watch out for yourself, you know, your own personal survival is key.
Would it be safe to say or make the suggestion that that person who's in that dark place only look forward to the next 5 minutes? Don't overwhelm themselves by saying, well, tomorrow I got to do this, or tomorrow this is going to happen, or tomorrow I've got to face life without so-and-so, or tomorrow, when all they have to do is get through the next moment in time, because really that's the only time we're promised.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a lot to live through in life, so, I mean, there's a lot to look forward to, and, you know, just get through the next heartbeat, the next breath. You know, and a day above ground is a good day.
And the older I get, the more I appreciate that saying, because you're right. Even with the health problems that someone has, and God knows my husband has a multitude of them, every day that we have is, not even every day, but every minute that we have is a blessing, because I may wake up one day and he not there, and then I'll sit back and kick myself and say, well, I shoulda, I woulda, I coulda, I shoulda not thought about next week or what we're going to do 3 years from now. I shoulda just lived in the moment.
Mm-hmm. That's what a lot of people got to start doing, you know. I mean, I don't speak for everybody. Everybody has their own thing, but, I mean, just being here. You know, just being here, you know, and just breathing, you know, that's getting it through. And it's that's probably why I have a fascination with horror so much, is because, you know, as Lovecraft once said, you know, the strongest emotion to man is fear, and the strongest fear around is fear of the unknown. And if that doesn't say what horror is all about, that's it right there. You know, it's not always the axe murderer or the werewolf or the vampire. It's always that atmosphere and that feeling. And it has a sort of magic right there, which is kind of weird in the same conversation. But that horror genre is a genre that's unlike anything else.
And that is true, because it is true horror is the fear of not knowing, of the unknown, of speculating and expecting the worst, and it might be 10 times worse, or it might not be bad at all. But the
mm-hmm.
ultimate fear is that fear of the unknown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Alfred Hitchcock was one of the greats.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh,
because
yeah.
Because his shows always, when the viewer was watching one of his movies, you knew something was going to happen. You
mm-hmm.
didn't see it happen because it was a visual only in your head. Psycho comes to mind.
Yeah, and
go ahead.
Oh no, go ahead. You're first.
You didn't see Janet Leigh get brutally murdered. You
mm-hmm.
saw the shadow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one thing he said in an interview about filmmaking. He says, you know, you could be watching in a movie theater, watching a movie, then a bomb goes off inside the movie or whatever, you know, or something shocking happens for a second, and you're thinking, okay, the audience is shocked. But if you show that, you know, there's a ticking bomb or whatever, or there's a stalker moving close to the victim that doesn't notice them, the people in the audience will be saying, look behind you, look behind you, look out, you know. And that's the one thing that Hitchcock did well, was like he left that suspense and that terror linger, you know, for moments. And that was a certain magic right there, you know.
Do you think we've gotten away from the magic of pure horror?
I think, personally, that a lot of society has been desensitized because they don't have that awe and wonder about horror that we had grown up. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, all the slasher movies, all everything's gore and CGI effects and stuff like that nowadays. Yeah, of course, that took away from some of the magic. Horror comes in waves. It comes high and low. You know, especially the books and the movies. Right now we're at like a low, you know, there's the originality is kind of like at a standstill. But it'll hit peaks and valleys. And basically, like they said, the last 5-6 years, you know, some of the horror movies that I've seen or something else has been kind of like lackluster and watered down. Maybe I'm biased. But it's going to happen again. I mean, right now you see, you don't see a lot of horror just in horror movies and books, but in other genres, which is coming around. You know, there's some dramas and stuff and some others that have that tinge that, you know, that's getting it. So
one of another of the greats that comes to mind, it was the first horror movie I ever saw, and it's one of the things that turned me on to Poe and to Vincent Price, was The House of Usher.
Ah, yes, Roger Corman. Yes.
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 Because it was pure, unadulterated, edge of your seat, nail biting, teeth grinding horror.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Vincent Price was—he was the master at that. If they couldn't have picked a better person for that, and especially in that movie, Corman knew how to use the colors and how to use all the actors, even the costumes in there was used perfectly for, you know, The House of Usher. So I mean, you know, especially the paintings on the wall.
Yes.
You know, yeah, those paintings you can never forget. So yeah.
And everything that he put into the set of that movie had a meaning, a subtle meaning.
Oh yeah. Mhm.
And
I was
probably 13 maybe when I went to see it, and I was I think I might have really been too young to appreciate the full effect, because I had not really been. I love The Raven, but it didn't dawn on me that The House of Usher was Poe's. I just know
mm-hmm.
that was the best movie I had ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had the mm-hmm. the ability to see it again as I got older, and you have to sit and totally focus on it to fully appreciate what he did with that piece of literature, because reading it was bad enough, and I don't mean in a bad way, but it was spooky enough reading it, but to see it on the big screen and hearing the fingernails in the casket, and mm-hmm. you just didn't know what she was going to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, that's I think that's where a lot of us horror authors and people that love the genre comes right from the childhood. Because one of the things I remember when I was growing up is I used to watch Night Gallery with Rod Serling. And I remember I used to keep my hand over my eyes, but peeking through my fingers. You know, and, you know, Frankenstein and Dracula from Creature Features at 10:30 at night, you know. Yeah, so it's ingrained in us from a very early age. And, you know, that's how we grew up.
So. Do you think that horror, and I know The House of Usher was done in Technicolor, but it was a mm-hmm. subtle Technicolor. But the original Dracula movie with Lon Chaney, it
mm-hmm.
was black and white. To me,
mm-hmm.
that is a classic. That the Dracula movies that we do today are too in your face and they're too bold.
Well, it's you know, black and white and color could be done in two different ways. I mean, there are some color versions now that are pretty good because, you know, it doesn't matter what's in your face or the color, but the atmosphere. It's got to have an atmosphere and a soundtrack.
Right.
Everything's got to blend together in one perfect, you know, vision. So, yeah.
I just find it interesting that Lon Chaney's Dracula had more of an impact on me as a child.
Mm-hmm.
Then,
yeah.
Let's say Anne Rice's The Vampire, Interview with a Vampire.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was the dynamic. I don't know if it. And when I say the colors are too bold, I equate color with action and setting.
Mm hmm. Mm hmm.
And the colors were too, maybe bold is not a right word, they were too bright because
mm-hmm.
Dracula is not a colorful creature. He's a creature of the night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's, coincidentally enough, I'm researching vampires right now for a podcast I'm going to be doing in about a week. So, yeah, I've been going into like the vampire literature myself and some of the vampire movies, and yeah, basically you are correct, because the black and white and with the classic monsters work a little bit more well than modern day. But there are some modern day films out there, you know, like about 10 years ago, that take a good swing at it, and they do pretty well. One good of it is Near Dark by Catherine Bigelow that came out back in the late 80s. That took the vampire genre and threw it out there. And George Romero did one called Martin, where the vampire is totally different. I mean, I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but people are more than welcome to look those up. And anything horror genre, movie or book that takes something classic and turns it into a different direction, it could either be a hit or a miss. And
mm-hmm.
you know, most of the time it's a hit and sometimes it is a miss. But that's just how it goes with the genre itself.
Well, I just find it all very interesting because, like you say, horror is the fear of the unknown, whether it be vampires,
mm-hmm.
whether it be the souls within ourselves. And we are, sometimes we are our own horror story.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That
expound
is
on
right
that
there.
A little bit. Expound on that a little bit, Rick.
It's always that fine line within ourselves that we could create our own horror or create our own, you know, path of least resistance. There are most of the horror I find within quote unquote human beings is the horror of the decisions they make. You know, in like a split second or things they've done in the past. That's why, you know, my second book of poetry, More Regrets Than Glories, is basically a companion volume. And that's basically the soul of that, pardon the word, soul of that one is basically, you know, the choices you make and the consequences that happen from those choices. You know, the one in there, that's where I get the title for More Regrets Than Glories. And in that second book is, I had so many here, I'm drawing a blank. I'll have to come to it right now. I don't have it in front of me. But it's
okay.
About a man in a theater. And basically, that was basically inspired by Thomas Ligotti, where a man goes into a theater all alone. And in that theater, on the screen is like everything he's done bad in his life. And he leaves the theater basically empty with thinking, okay, where do I go to now? So that's what's really, really different in that poem that I wrote. So that's a sell it all right there.
Do you write more poetry as opposed to short stories, or do you just write all poetry?
Well, I do write short stories. I started writing poetry as a way of, like, you know, throwing some of the horror in there. Poetry and short stories are two different things. Poetry to me is basically like the snacks you could have during the day, the little tidbits, the little morsels you could have during the day. Short stories are more like, okay, you're going to have a meal. Here's what you do for the recipe to make a short story. Poetry is a little bit easier to write. Short stories are more of a challenge. And to go back to that was Old Theater was my poem about that. That's where I got the title for More Regrets Than Glories. The title is basically part of that poem from Old Theater. And so right now I'm trying to challenge myself every time I write something. I started out with poetry. I wrote some short stories. I just finished a novella, believe it or not, that I'm in the process of getting edited and hopefully published next year. And so I always try to challenge myself a little bit more when I write. So, and it's, you know, I always try to raise that bar a little bit more.
Which do you like writing better, the short stories or the poetry?
That's a good question. Well, the poetry is good whenever I want to take a refresher and just like step away from writing the novella or short story and I go into a poem. Poems are like, you know, quicker and you're able to concentrate, you know, a scene very short in a certain amount of words. I do like writing short stories now. I'm more partial to that because I'm able to get my voice a little bit more and get my teeth into it, pardon the words, when I write a short story. So, you know, there's always that one thing is whenever you're writing a short story, I found a few times when I write or I hit a certain sentence or I write a certain paragraph and I read through it and I'm thinking, yeah, this is it. I did it, you know, and this is what I meant to say. So it's a little bit more satisfying now as I evolved that short stories are, I'm really getting my gut in there now.
Do you ever see yourself writing a full horror book?
Like a novel?
Yes.
Or I thought about that. But like I said, this novella I just wrote, that took me like a year to write because, you know, I work full time. I work in a restaurant 6 days a week, you know, and with life and everything else, you know, I try to take every day to write something, either, you know, a couple sentences or maybe a couple hundred words. I try each day to do something with my writing. Yeah, I have passed around the idea in my head of writing a novel. right now that probably be on the back burner because one other thing I'm working on now is I'm taking some of my short stories and I'm going to put them in book form. I'm in the process of getting a book, a short story collection together. So there's a lot on the burners right now, you know, a lot of ideas passing around. And I would like to try to do that, yes.
Well, I know that the short stories of yours that I have read, and as well as your poetry, I'm thinking to myself as I'm reading this, okay, I want to know more. Why did he stop here? That wasn't very nice of him.
I've had people mention that. They're thinking, wait a minute, you could have wrote this longer, or you could have done this, or why didn't you explain that? You know, when I write a story and I read through it, I try to leave a little bit of ambiguity in there, a little bit of mystery in everything I write. You know, it's not good to, like, explain everything. You got to let the reader judge for themselves on a few things. Sure, I
mean,
agree.
If you give the reader everything, then what's the point?
Yeah. Yeah, so sometimes you got to leave the shape underneath the sheet. You can't, like, pull that sheet back to look what's under there. You got to leave a little something under there.
And then let them use their own imagination to figure it out.
Right. I mean, I'm not a professional by no means. You know, I just write because I have something to say and I like writing. You know, I mean, you know, will I ever get to a bestseller status? Will I ever get awards? No, I don't think I'm far from that right now. I mean, I have a story to say, and it's just so damn fun just to write. And, you know, sometimes to unnerve some people that, you know, I get a perverse thrill out of doing that. But maybe that just says a lot about me.
Well, you think about it. If we tell everything, or we don't allow the audience to draw their own conclusion in some things.
Mm-hmm.
They don't keep coming back because they know what to expect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we want them to become addicted to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then on some level, we might not even know the end of the story.
That is right, because, you know, I just, you know, a lot of people say, do you do research? Do you look a lot of stuff up? I says, well, do you write out an outline? Do you write out a plan? I just listen to what the muse is telling me, you know, when I write something. I just let the story flow. I know, when I write, I know the beginning and I know the end. It's all that crap in the center I have trouble with.
And,
you
of
know?
Course, if you...
I mean,
if you ignore the muses, they're going to shut up, and you're not going to be able to do anything because they're going to be mad at you for at least a month.
Oh, my muse is sadistic, I tell you that. I mean, I could be, you know, I could sit in front of the keyboard for like an hour and a half thinking, oh, I know what letters look like. But I could wake up at 2 in the morning, or I could be driving to work, and then the story hits me, and I'm thinking, oh, are you kidding me now? You know? So, yeah.
That's why you need a tape recorder with you so you can or your little smartphone, hit record and let the muse talk, and people will think you've lost your mind because you're sitting there talking to yourself while you're going to work, but it works.
Yeah, well, I already have people think I'm totally fruit nutty already as it is, so I'm not worried about that.
Well, that's okay. Let them think that. As Alice told the Mad Hatter, which is one of my favorite lines in the entire story, the Hatter said, I'm crazy. That's why I'm mad as a Hatter. And she says, the best people are. So, yeah, we are the best people. And if it weren't for us being crazy or mad or in anything in between, I can guarantee you that 99% of the population would have absolutely no entertainment.
You got that right. Yeah.
So we do serve a purpose.
Yeah, this is true.
Strange though it might be, we do serve a purpose, and there are those that are as twisted as we are.
Yeah.
How did you get hooked up with Hydra and the ladies and gentlemen of horror. I know how you got hooked up with me. It's just one of those things we all fell in together all those many years ago. But how did you get hooked up with Juan Lam's library and the Haiku and Hydra?
It was just like a chain of people. I mean, you know, when I've known Hydra since MySpace days. Yeah, that is a long time ago.
That
telling
is
you right
a long
now.
Time ago.
Yeah.
I've known
and,
her that long, too.
And, you know, when after I did my book, you know, book of poetry, you know, and she had her magazine, Infernal Ink Magazine, which is erotic horror. And I've always enjoyed that. I've always enjoyed the, you know, the genre or the stories that, like, totally blow it out of the water, that usually just break the barriers down. And Infernal Ink Magazine does that. You know, you really don't see erotic horror anywhere. And I tried my hand at, and my first short story was Patient 151, which is erotic horror. And I wrote it, and I just sent it to her on a whim, and I said, hey, you know, read this. What do you think of it? And she says, you know, I like this. I want to put it in my magazine, and that totally blew me away. I didn't think, you know, this would, you know, take off like it did. And that, of course, that story I wrote is like one of my most extreme stories as far as sexual and graphic content. I just took a lot of personal, you know, personal ideas and threw it into there. And that's, and ever since then, you know, every once in a while I submit a few poems to her or another story. And she referred me to a few people, and that's where I heard about Jennifer Miller from Ladies and Gentlemen of Horror. And, you know, and Jennifer is fantastic. I mean, what she does with that book every year and the quality of writers and the content, and it all goes to a fantastic cause. Hers is all the proceeds donate to the American Cancer Society. And, yeah, and so I just, and basically Walloon's library, you know, she referred me to Andrea Van Stoic over there, and, you know, and I just, it just started, you know, snowballing to a few other people and a few other anthologies, and, you know, I just, that's how it goes. You just got to get a network going, you know, if anybody out there is interested in submitting, you know, just get in some groups, you know, some Facebook groups or whatever, Twitter, social media, friends, and don't be afraid to put it out there. Yeah, the show, you know.
Come on, my show.
Yvonne Mason show. There you go. Yvonne Mason's off the chain. There you go.
Shameless
okay.
plug there.
Hey, nothing shameless about plugging, I tell you. So,
but it's true because, and this segues into something, like I said, we always go off script here because there is no script, but this segues into we as an indie community, we all come together to help each other to succeed. And it's not done for any self-glory, but because when that person succeeds, then we succeed. We all succeed together. We all feel like that when one of us does something really, really great, we've all done it because we've all been with that person and encouraged that person and been a part of that person's life and helped them on their journey. So we're a very tight-knit community.
Yeah. And, you know, all the, you know, independent writers that I met on the path here, you know, I've met a lot of people that encourage other people, you know, and give honest criticism. And that helps anybody grow, be it a writer, musician, artist. You know, one thing I always try to do with my books is I always try to get some other people that I know involved, like John Souter for some of my short stories for Kindle. You know, I always tell him, hey, you know, I want to hire you or whatever, and, you know, and I'll promote your work, you promote mine. And, you know, and it just starts a network. And, you know, like my collection of poetry, More Regrets Than Glories, I worked with Amanda Parker. She was, you know, one of the people that are crucial for that second book of poetry is she helped me do the layout. And each section of that book of poetry is a stanza from one of her own poems. So,
wow.
And everything. Yeah, yeah. So her and I got our heads together with that, and she had a poem that she wrote that she published a while ago, and I said, here's what I want to do. I want to try to take your poem and have it as an opening line for each of the chapters, you know. And so it's all just, you know, getting people together that you know and working together, you know, in whatever artistic ability that you have, and just it'll help you grow and help you learn. I mean, as far as editing, my editing skills leave a lot to be desired. So I always work with other people. Hydra, you know, she edits a lot of my stuff and she's fantastic at it. And you just gotta, you know, get it out there, you know. And if I give advice to any, be afraid. If you have something you wrote and you're afraid of getting rejected, get rejected. I mean, because it's going to happen, especially in the writing world. I mean, you know, that don't take it personally, because if you write something, if you paint something, if you make a song, sing a song or write a poem, just remember one thing. You created something that no one else has ever created. You have something unique.
And what our group, our little Phoenix Writers group, has helped a lot of people come out of their shell. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. Mhm. Yeah. And there was a couple of my friends that were afraid to publish, and it took me a while, and I just told them, hey, you know, don't put it out there. You know, if you're going to get bad criticism, if people are going to say it sucks, some people will like it. I mean, it's yours. It is yours. You know, don't be afraid to put it out there.
And it's their dream.
Mm-hmm.
And they should never allow someone else to steal that dream, because they don't have their permission to steal that dream.
No, not at all. You know, that you as far as a writing, if this is your love to do it, or if you're, you know, a painter or an artist, this is yours. No one could take that away from you.
And no one else can do it like you can do it either, because no one can write the kind of stuff you write, I'm going to tell you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have not read Rick Powell's literature, you got to go and read it, because it is absolutely magnificent. It is old-time horror, and if you're fans of old-time horror, that's what Rick writes, because those were his influences. If you're lovers of Thomas Ligeti or Poe or Arthur McCain or Ramsey Campbell or Lovecraft, then Rick Powell is your guy, because he will leave you going, what? I need more of this. I got to go get another fix here.
I've had one person say to me, you know, he says, I like what you wrote, but it was really bizarre. And I thought, okay, well, I did my job. I mean, you know, that's,
your job,
I mean,
here is done now.
So, I mean, that's, I mean, 90% of the time I write because it's something I would like to read, you know?
Yes.
I write what I would like to read, and that's basically it right there. So you just follow what's in your gut, you know?
Well, you do a fantastic job of it, an absolutely
Thank
fantastic
you very much.
Job. You've been in how many of my books now?
Three of them. Welcome to Your Nightmare, Satan's Holiday, and Blessings from the Darkness. Yeah, those three, yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, his stuff, just it'll just reach out and grab you by the throat and shake you till you turn blue. It's that good.
Well,
things nightmares are made of.
Well, I'm very self-critical of my work. I mean, it's just like I don't see it that way. Some people do. You know, I appreciate the – thank you very much for the kind words. That means a lot.
I always speak the truth. You know me long enough. I pull no punches, right?
Not you. Nope.
I just call it like it is. Not like I see it, but just like it is. Tell the folks, my friend, where you can be found, where your work can be found, and how people can get in contact with you, because
well,
I know after tonight people are going to be looking for author Rick Powell?
I'm mostly on Facebook. I do have a Goodreads page, and I have an Amazon page where you can find most of my short stories are for Kindle format. I do have, my poetry books are available on Lulu, and they are available on Amazon for Kindle, too. And, just contact me through Facebook. Like I said, of my two poetry books that are in print now, the first one, My Soul Stain, My Seed Sour, that one is all the proceeds go to the American Heart Association. And I do have a follow-up book of poetry that is just, personal for myself that me and Mandy Parker worked on. And, I'm always looking, for any honest critique, anybody that's interested. And if they want to contact me, just go through Facebook or, Goodreads, and I'm on there.
And you are coming back after the first of the year. We talked about this
on
the show.
I'd be more than happy to, yeah. I know we, didn't talk about a few other publications that I'll be in, but I'd be more than happy to come on again, Yvonne. I'd be honored.
And when you come back, I want you to have your latest More Regrets Than Glory, because I want you to read some of your work, and let's give these people a taste of their new addiction.
Thank you. Yeah, I'd be more than happy to. So, yes, thank you.
And then we can analyze them. We can talk about what was the reason behind this poem. What were you thinking, or what was the motive? Because every true poem, there's a motive, whether it's conscious or unconscious. There's always a motive.
Yeah. That's. I can't think of any right now, but I know as I go through all the poems, yeah, I could probably go through what was picking through my brain at the time. So yeah.
Uh-huh. Yep. So you can be found on Facebook. You can be found on Goodreads. Your books can be found on Lulu, also on Kindle,
or Amazon. Yes.
Our Amazon. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm telling you, if you like the writings of Poe, of Ligeti, of McKeon, of Campbell, of H.P. Lovecraft, hell for that matter, from some even as far back as the author of Dr. Frankenstein, Dracula, Bram Stoker, you will want to read Rick's poetry and his short stories, because they are written in that type of dichotomy. They're dark, but they leave the reader going, I want more, or there's a tingling down my spine that I can't make stop because I can't stop thinking about this.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, I tried to do all old school horror with some of my stuff. So, I mean, when hopefully next year when my book of short stories will come out, and I'm going to be working on some darker stuff in the interim. So, yeah.
Well, with that, I'm going to say thank you very much for being on my show and spending an hour with me. I'm very honored, and I appreciate it so, so much. We're going to have you back next year. And ladies and gentlemen, remember, this is the last show for the next Wednesday, we start back up at 8 o'clock Eastern Time with Tom Fortrell, a.k.a. T.G. Reaper. This is Off the Chain. The music tonight was by Cypher called Dark Mistress. Go out and get it. This is an amazing band out of Canada, and it just fit tonight's show so well. I am your host, Yvonne Mason, and as all of you know, we are always off the chain on this show. If you want to be on the show, contact me. Had a guy contact me today out of the blue. Don't know where he heard about me, but apparently he listened to the show, and he will be on the show. So contact me, whether you have a platform, a business, you're a musician, you're an artist, you're a writer, you're whatever. That's why we call it off the chain. So until next Wednesday night, November the 30th, 8 p.m. sharp, be there. This is Yvonne, and this is Off the Chain, and I say good night. Hang on just a second, Rick, until we go off the air. Now we are off the air. And I wanted to say real quickly, thank you, thank you, thank you so
thank
much.
You.
And
hopefully it went well.
It went very well because we talked about things, but we went totally off the chain because one thing led to another, which led to another, which led to another, which is the way this show runs.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you sharing that personal part of your life with me because I really believe that you're going to touch someone from this show tonight who's hurting and who needed to hear that it's okay to hurt, but it's even more okay to move on.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome,
thank
my dear, and I will get these shows up on the podcast. I will put them up on Facebook, and it might be in the morning, and I'll tag you. And then please use this to promote yourself.
Thank you. I will. Thank you, Yvonne.
All right, my dear, and I'll get you set up for next year. I'll send you a date, and if it works, let me know. If not, we'll do something else.
Gotcha.
All right, my dear. Until then, good evening and happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you also. Thank you.
All right, darling. Good night.
Well.